Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. It is the 1st of April, and as I mentioned, it is official. April Fool's Day has been canceled. I have no problem with that, but I just wanted to warn you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. I hope you are safe. I hope you are sound. I hope you are with us in good spirits. We have many heavy things to talk about, but if we do so together, it lightens the load, I know. We welcome you to join in our conversation, panel at WAMC.org. We all have to social distance, but this way, through the radio, it allows us to collect and to gather and to be together in this theater of the mind that is radio. So we thank you for being a part, and we thank you for lending us your ears and listening, and even better, your brains and your minds as you volley questions our way throughout the proceedings. To do so, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say this morning on a wide range of topics. Let me introduce everybody to you, and we will get started. Yes, we will get started. Here we go. My screen froze up, but I'm better now. Okay, WAMC's Alan Chartak is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Chief. I'm doing good. It's a great, beautiful morning in the Berkshires.
Yeah, it is. It's very pretty out, and it puts a little skip in your step. And even if you, obviously, all of our plans have changed, but it lets you feel good about the world outside and to communicate and to spend some time in nature as well.
It takes a little of the edge off.
It does indeed. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill. Talk about taking the edge off. Chris Churchill, good morning. How are you? Do I have everybody on the line? Do I have Chris Churchill on the line? All right. We're going to get Chris. We'll get Chris back. We lost Chris. We had Chris. We lost Chris. We'll get Chris back. Investigative reporter and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am here. In addition to birds singing and the sun out, we are eating cake this morning. My 100-year-old great aunt is making a cake every day of Lent and delivering it to someone who needs it. And my mother and I were the recipients last night. So there you go. Boston cream pie for breakfast.
Ooh. Let them eat cake. Yes, that is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob, you getting a piece of that?
Boy, do I really wish I could. It sounds so good.
Bob Griffith is with us. He is Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. I assume, sir, you are a vital and essential worker, and you are on the scene. Am I correct in that?
That is correct. Yep, it's been an interesting three and a half weeks. One thing, Joe. Alan, I thought you did an amazing job with the governor yesterday, so I just want to congratulate you and AMC for terrific journalism.
Well, congratulate him. He really was remarkable. I do believe, he is, feeling this. He has a tremendous responsibility. He's got a brother who has the disease now. He was very kind to us yesterday. Very kind.
I just want to...
Great interview. Sorry, Joe.
No, I just want to remind people, if they missed it, they can hear it online. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. It's right on the main page, and you can listen to it, and you really should. It's a beautiful interview and really, really special. Chris Churchill, I believe you are now with us. Good morning. How are you?
How are you?
We're well, thank you. It's nice to have you here.
So glad you can hear me. I was talking before, but nobody. It's a very weird sensation to be talking and then have people say, "Nope, he's not there."
Yeah. Well, the mic is on
like
now.
Teenagers.
Right. You're saying all these words and they're just not registering at all. Yes. Well. Good morning, everybody, and again, we thank you very much for being with us, and we have a lot to talk about. There's much in the news. And much of it is very grim, but if we all go through it together and kind of figure it out and talk about it, hopefully we can make the best of it and get through the other side. Safety in numbers, and while we can't gather personally, we certainly can gather in this forum. So let's get started. Here basically is what we're looking at. Obviously, the death toll is rising. The numbers that were coming out after the White House press conference yesterday were anywhere between 100 and 240,000 deaths that are possible. And that's really the best case scenario. That is if everybody does what they're supposed to do. So that is a grim prediction. As many as 240,000 Americans could die during the coronavirus pandemic. That, according to top health officials. Also, they are being asked to, everyone's being asked to do all those things that you're supposed to, that we've been warned about, of limiting travel, staying home, closing schools, social distancing. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, and Deborah Birx, who is the coordinating the White House's response, encouraged people to adhere to distancing guidelines, noting that more than 2.2 million Americans could have died if nothing had been done. As of this morning, there had been at least 3,900 virus-related deaths in the U.S. Also, as many as 25%, this is an interesting figure, I think, scary, but interesting, as many as 25% of people infected with the virus may not show symptoms, a number that is leading the CDC to consider broadening its guidelines on who should wear masks. Governors from across the political spectrum are once again challenging the president and the Trump administration's assertion that the U.S. is well prepared to test people and care for the sickest patients. We can talk about that. Asked on Tuesday whether President Trump's suggestion that a lack of diagnostic kits was no longer a problem, Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican of Maryland, said that's just not true. Meanwhile, the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, said medical personnel from around the country are arriving to help shore up New York's healthcare system. He warned that the city expected a huge increase in cases next week. The president has been reluctant to use the full force of a wartime production law to respond to the pandemic. It has already been invoked hundreds of thousands of times during his presidency. One of the looming questions is why not now? I know that's a question that Rosemary asked earlier this week. And support from independents and some Democrats has driven Mr. Trump's approval rating to 49%, equal to the best of his presidency. So a lot of facts there. We will start. Bob, we haven't heard from you in a while. You were not with us last week because you were busy working, but I'm interested in what you have to, your thoughts on what some of the items I just mentioned.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And it's great to be back. You know, 100,000 to 240,000 deaths is certainly being modeled on one of the more conservative models, and I think that number has me a little bit concerned. The administration has sort of been cherry-picking numbers that I think suits their position rather than looking holistically at a range, I think a more moderated range. You know, Joe, I have a hard time with an administration that says 240,000 dead Americans is a good job, and yet we continue to cling to the administrative position that we were prepared and that we did everything that we could. Because honestly, I don't believe that's the case.
Can I ask a question? I was struck by this. I just mentioned it when I was reading the headlines there, but The president during the press conference yesterday, and he's done it a couple of times, keeps on talking about the fact that if we had done nothing, it could have been as many as 2.5 million deaths. Why? I mean, that seems to be silly to me to say that, because why would you ever do nothing? He keeps on saying,
well,
if
we still are doing nothing. There are states, again, Florida is at the top, Missouri, Mississippi, where there's not complete lockdowns, where there's not enforcement, where there's still this Fox belief that it's nothing major. So we still are not at that 100 to 240,000 is if, as the doctor explained, we do everything perfectly. We are not doing everything perfectly even now.
Not only that, think about this, Rosemary and gang and Bob. And by the way, I don't know how, Joe, you were so prescient to get Bob on with the title of the head of the School of Emergency Preparedness. Boy, if ever there was a perfect guy to have on, he is it. But
it's always good to have a sky is falling guy in your Rolodex.
Well, but really, I mean, how many people have the head of the School of Emergency Preparedness on in the middle of a COVID, operation like we're looking at right now? It's unbelievable. And again, it's your thinking through this thing, Joe, is so beautiful. Okay, so let me just say that this president. Come on, everybody, please. Do you remember when he said there were only 5 cases in the United States or 15 and those would be wiped out in no time at all?
They would all go away, yeah.
And remember that? You remember when he said the whole thing was a Democratic hoax? And yesterday he has the nerve to get on the air and to say New York wasn't prepared. No, Mr. President, you weren't prepared. You denied the whole thing. You were a denier, and now you have to face the music. Although, the more he lies, the more people believe. 49% approval rating, that is unbelievable to me.
You know, Bob, I just want to get back to that point, though, of what, you know, we were never at a point where we weren't going to do something, right? I mean, just that idea of giving yourself credit, like, oh, yeah, you know, we would have had 500 fires if we didn't have fire companies. I don't understand that.
Well, I mean, it's continued deflection over the basic fact that the federal government fell down in one of its primary missions, which is to protect the health and safety of its citizens. And as much as Trump wants to deflect, saying that the states didn't act, if it wasn't for the states, we couldn't even have a chance at the lower numbers of deaths, which is absolutely incredible. You know, in a very bizarre way, I feel right now that I'm in this living in this really twisted version of 1984, where the dear leader is frankly allowed to change the facts as it fits his needs. And that's really dangerous. That's incredibly dangerous to this country. And you know, there's another trend that I'll put on the table for everybody to talk about. I'm looking at the aid packages that are going to states, and I'm really getting concerned that there's a partisan bend to this. That places like Florida and Texas are getting 100% of their ask, but places like New York and California aren't. And here's my question, okay? Where is our congressional delegation, especially Trump supporters? So where's Stefanik? Where's Lee Zeldin? Where are our congressmen demanding what our citizens need?
That's a great point.
Well, they're blaming it on us, Bob. They're saying that, you know, we push this whole, liberals push this whole impeachment thing, and that distracted the president from the coronavirus epidemic.
Are people really saying that?
What's his name? McConnell said it yesterday, and then Trump responded saying, yeah, you know, I thought I was handling it right, but I probably was a little distracted. Others have noted that, of course, he was not distracted from either golf or many political rallies held during the same time. But he is now using impeachment as the excuse.
Chris Churchill.
Hey, Chris, you know, I can only say I read it in the paper, so it must be true.
What do you make of this, Chris?
Well, I just, you know, this is going to almost sound like I'm cutting Trump a break, and it's not at all how I mean it. I agree with everything that's been said so far, but one thing I will say about him is that he has no experience at all with this sort of thing. We've gone through a period now where we've kind of devalued experience. And I think we're seeing the consequences of that. I mean, if you've never been in a role where you've had to handle a crisis like this, and then it's suddenly put on your plate, it's not really that surprising to me that there would be failures, you know? I mean,
Isn't it then incumbent upon the person who does not have the experience to turn it over to people who do?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, he's kind of compounded. We've had other presidents with little experience before, but they at least had the wherewithal to hire experienced people or to listen to experienced people. I think compounding Trump's problem is the fact that he, A, really distrusts the bureaucracy, and that, you know, he just has a very bad working relationship with much of the government. and two, has hired a bunch of people who also have almost no experience or who.
Uh-oh. All right. Yeah,
Chris, but you know something, Chris, it's damning with faint praise when we sort of hold up our hands and say, well, he's just incompetent, not malicious. I mean, it's a horrible time for the vacuum in federal leadership. And it's not just Trump. It's his administration. It's the fact that DHS is a mess. The fact that the National Security Council is a mess. The fact that HHS is a mess. And, you know, and it's difficult. I don't understand how people can support an administration when even in the midst of the worst public health crisis that we have had in 100+ years, they're still talking about unrolling Obamacare and taking away health care for American citizens. It's so anti-American, I don't understand how anybody can support this administration right now.
You know, yesterday, it was very interesting, gang. I was fascinated by how many of the questions from the reporters at the president's press briefing were throwing the questions almost as if they had decided to do this to the experts and ignoring him, which really seemed to tick him off, because at one point he just bullied his way back into the podium. But it was interesting. It was fascinating to me that they decided, okay, if this guy's going to be full of BS, we're going to go to the experts, and Fauci and all the others were called up to the microphone. He didn't like it one bit. That was clear.
He didn't, but it was one of the more informational press conferences that we've had, or press briefings.
And Joe, don't you think that was on purpose on the part of the press? It sounded to me
absolutely.
Like they had decided enough of this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Bob, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you've been a part of our program for a long time, and if I'm reading something wrong, I apologize, but you seem scared.
I wouldn't say scared. I'm definitely in response mode. That there is so much that we need to do as a society, and I think my patience for partisan crap right now is completely drained. I salute what the governors, both Republican and Democrat, have done. I think what Hogan has done in Maryland is spot on. Of course, I think Cuomo's done an amazing job. I think Pritzker has done a great job. I think DeWine's done a great job, Inslee, Newsom, and that's where we have to hold on to our we have to anchor ourselves around the competency of the governors. So scared is not the right word, but definitely in response mode.
So where does your optimism lie then? In a minute, I apologize.
Sure. My optimism lies in the fact that as a society, we're amazing. And as a people, we're caring and kind and empathetic, even if the administration right now doesn't reflect that. And collectively, I know we're going to see ourselves through this.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have your letters. We welcome your letters. Please keep them short and to the point. And we'll get to as many as we can. We do love them. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Romeo, Bob Griffin. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Romeo, and Bob Griffin. It's 34 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we thank you for being with us. We do have a lot of letters, and let's start with those. We go to Mike, who says, the Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival has been canceled for the entire season. Other cultural venues have delayed openings. Will any open at all? Are there some that won't be able to recover? I think it's going to be interesting to see, isn't it?
Well, no, this is a
front page story in the New York Times today about how the arts are just suffering mightily, that everything is shut down, and that's a huge revenue hit, and no one knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be – I think there's the potential for this to extend longer than initially thought.
Yeah.
At the same time, this is where – you know, this is – I mean, one of the positives that may come out of this whole situation is – it may force us as a people to start to review where our priorities are. And certainly the idea of a robust arts and social opportunities is way up there. But I do think there's going to be a lot of institutions that are going to struggle to survive. And it's not just in the arts. I also think it's in academia as well.
Chris, any thoughts? I think we have lost Chris again. I'm sensing a theme. All right, we'll work on that. And let's go on to other letters. Janice says, Obama was hit with an Ebola crisis and other terrible crises, and he didn't have the experience, but he handled it. What do you think of that, Bob Griffin?
Yeah, I'm reluctant to draw comparisons with the Ebola crisis, just because the nature of the outbreaks are so very different. The strange thing about Ebola is that it is so lethal that it has a tendency to kill its host before it can spread. So it's a very different animal. With that said, I think the Obama administration did make some initial missteps in the Ebola response, but I think they got the team together really quickly, and I think that was the in part due to the structure at the National Security Council and bringing the cabinet together. So I do think that the Obama administration moved quickly to repair the initial missteps, and they were pretty honest about it. You know, part of the other sort of frustration I have is that there was a whole pandemic plan that was at the White House that they didn't even realize it was there. And this is the problem of dumping all of the career bureaucrats. I know we use that as a bad word sometimes, Joe, but this is the backbone of our civil service, and these are the people who serve regardless of partisanship. And you can start to see that loss of expertise.
Anyone else on that? All right. We go to Bill, who said, I'm a small business owner in New York, and I'm impressed with the CARES Act, especially the Payroll Protection Program, forgivable loans when used to pay staff, rent, and utilities. How on earth did this administration get something so right? I am shocked. Alan?
Nancy Pelosi.
Are you going to go with Nancy Pelosi? Okay.
He's the one who put in things that Republicans had forgotten about. They didn't get out all of the bad stuff, but they did put in some good provisions.
I had put my control down because Murray was barking. I am so sorry.
Oh no, that's all right. I thought you were. I thought you were with Chris Churchill there for a minute. Go ahead.
Couldn't answer your question. I just think there are so many forces. This guy, Trump, now looks like a deer in the headlights when he's on there. You know, his whole being has changed. He's not the same guy who's always on the attack, always accusing somebody, but he can't help it. So when he said New York was late to the game, that was one more time that he was reverting to type. But he doesn't look like the same guy. He does look like he's lost.
Chris, are you back?
I think so. Can you hear me?
It's good.
We're good. Go ahead, Rosemary. I'm sorry. I was just checking in with Chris. Go ahead.
I just think it's a mistake to underestimate Trump. That little crack about New York was late to the game, completely, utterly untrue, was par for the course. He is still attacking federal regulations on air quality. His administration is still on the stuff about impeachment slowed me down. Come on.
He can't help himself, can he?
No, I don't think he can, Alan.
Again, there's thousands of his political appointees that are being paid by the taxpayers, and trust me, they weren't slowed down by impeachment. So this idea that all of the federal government was tied up with impeachment is frankly bull.
Yeah.
Well, again, I don't want to defend the administration, but his Azar, the reason he's so mad at his HHS secretary is because he was pressing for a huge expenditure on medical equipment just before this all came down. He was rejected. And then, of course, Trump had to come back to Congress and ask for much more. It's not true that everyone was asleep and did nothing. They were thwarted when they tried to do something.
Mm-hmm. Alan?
No, I was just thinking about Mitch McConnell, you know, in the hall saying it was the impeachment that did it.
Yeah.
If there is a St. Peter, Some of these people are going to have some serious questions to answer.
At the gate, right?
At the gate, yeah.
Or
is the elevator going down?
That's right. Barbara says, is there any way to
You know something, Joe? If there is a gate, then that means that they're finally going to get the wall that they're going to have to deal with.
Nicely done. Barbara says, is there any way that the behavior and rhetoric of the president can be characterized as criminally negligent? There were so many instances early in his presidency that people were talking about the 25th Amendment. And now, as we add this up, how can he not be culpable for increasing deaths? Gets to your point, Bob, of you see it. You gave us a litany of the negligence, and yet 49% approval rating.
Yeah. And I think the only way that there's going to be change is through the ballot box and elections.
Right. And so the question comes up once more. Is Joe Biden up to it? I hope he is. You know, I've watched a few of the interviews that he's been doing lately. They seem laconic to me.
Let's go to Bart, who says Cuomo shines when compared to Trump. How does Cuomo do when compared to governors of California and Washington? Their curves are flattening. New York's not so much. Bob, I'll let you handle that one. Doesn't seem like a fair comparison, though, does it?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't. And honestly, I would say that I think Cuomo has done a better job than either Inslee or Newsom in California and Washington. I am incredibly concerned about what's occurring in L.A. right now. So I don't believe that the curve is flattening. I believe that actually it's accelerating. And I don't have a sense of what's occurring in San Francisco right now. With that said, I think the governors have done as much as they can. And this is why I think a pandemic is a more federal problem to deal with than a local problem, because you can't afford to have mixed messages coming out. You can't afford to tell everybody to stay home in Louisiana and then have the governor of Texas tell everybody that, you have the freedom to do what you want to do, because that's just pushing the spread of the virus.
You know, political science 101. We always teach that there are powers that are reserved to the states, and healthcare was supposed to be one of them. And yet, quite correctly, the Congress established the right committee. Senator Kennedy, I believe, was the head of it and the rest of it. And the theory was that this is not a state problem. This healthcare stuff and health crosses state lines, and therefore it's a federal problem, and it is. To deny that is nuts.
You know, in Florida, the governor is saying, it's not a state problem. It's a local issue. It's up to mayors to close beaches and all that. The real problem here is not who has the power. It's coordination. And I think Governor Cuomo has made a good case for what's really needed is someone to coordinate everything at a higher level than he is, someone who can bring Republican and Democratic colleagues together, FEMA or the military, to distribute equipment and to order en masse. And that's what's missing. It's not even rocket science. It's just a matter of willpower and organization, I think.
It's also providing a beacon. Sorry, Rosemary, but it's also about providing a beacon for people. And I'm going back to the comment about 49% approval rating. That's because we, all of us, are desperately searching for a light in the darkness. And that's what a good president should be doing. And when the good president doesn't do it, then the governors do it. And that's why I think you see Cuomo's press conference actually being more widely cited than what's occurring out of the White House.
I have bad news and I have good news. The bad news is that Chris Churchill was on technology that is not cooperating with us today. So instead of having him continuing to try and wasting a lot of his time, we told him he could take the day off. The good news is, so that's bad news for us. The good news is for the rest of you, you get more airtime. So congratulations.
Chris, if you drive to Rosemary's house, she's got Boston cream pie.
Isn't that funny how I did that?
Yeah, sure. 6 feet distancing, but you
don't
can get some
don't mess with me, because you could be next, Bob.
All right, we're going to take a break. Hopefully keep everybody else on the air, and we'll be back right after this. ¶¶ Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Thank you very much. We enjoy your letters, panel at WAMC.org, and we have many, many of them. The only thing that we ask you, well, we ask you many things about the letters, but the one that's really important right now, because we're getting so many, I mentioned this the other day, but we're getting about, you know, four times the number that we normally get. So if you can make them really short and to the point, which many of you are, and we thank you for that, it allows us to get to as many as possible over the time that we have together. Like this one from Rich, that's a one-liner. Good for Rich. Why did the Trump administration not take over the purchase and distribution of ventilators? Bob.
You know, that's an excellent question. And I would have seen that as an opportunity for the federal government to help coordinate among the states. You heard the governor talk about the frustration of bidding on respirators to be outbid by California, then to be outbid by FEMA. I mean, we're undercutting ourselves. And this is where I think FEMA and the federal government should have and could have and has to play a more leading role than they have.
We go to Nancy, who says people talked about the importance of other domestic candidates dropping out of the race in order to strengthen and rally around a presumptive nominee, which at present is Joe Biden. Your insistence on promoting Governor Cuomo as a viable candidate is irresponsible at this time, says Nancy, and could weaken our chances of defeating Trump. The majority of Democrats have so far voted and chosen Biden. Please stop voting this unlikely pipe dream.
Well, I take it that
I don't agree with it, but Alan has the right to bring it out, and he is talking about leadership calls. Alan, I need to defend you here, and from someone who has the exact opposite point of view, maybe that's important. That's exactly what the show is supposed to be about, is talking about possibilities and could have been, should have been. So there you go.
I'm one who really would love to see Joe Biden run and win. I think it would be great. So far, I believe that he has not stepped up. He needs to. Here's what I think is really important in a candidate. And in the wrong way, it's what Trump has. In the right way, it's what Cuomo has. These people understand that passion is important in politics. Passion. You can't be laconic. You can't lay back. You can't assume that if you speak in a low tone, that people will respond to it. Not in this country. They want somebody who will be a leader. Now, if Joe Biden gets the nomination and wins, I'll be the happiest person in the world. I'm just looking around the corner and seeing the numbers coming up. And for the first time, we are seeing that Biden and Trump are literally tied 50-50 in a poll that I recently saw. Now, there are different polls. They'll say different things. But I do think this needs to be discussed because this is this is the worst time I've ever seen in my whole life.
Right.
Yeah, can I jump in on that, Joe?
Sure.
We're not necessarily saying that we think Cuomo should run against Biden. I think what I'm doing is that I'm holding up Cuomo as an example of the characteristics that I'm looking for out of my political leadership. And I want politicians or wannabe politicians to hear loud and clear what characteristics we think are important for them to have if they are going to earn our vote.
Look, leadership, that's what leadership is about. Leadership is harnessing, you know, the popular will and saying, this is a guy that I can follow. I had a guy here separated by the right amount on our lawn mower yesterday. And he said to me, you know, I thought maybe Trump would do something, unquote. I thought Trump, not now. But the point really is, he was taken in by the scam.
I'm going to go on to some other letters here. Gary has a good one and something I've wondered about. Why aren't we all required to wear face masks when shopping? Why aren't we screened with temperature tests when going into the supermarket or the subway station or the bus? China flattened the curve much faster than the U.S. and those measures helped. Going into the grocery store is, I find, to just be like the scariest thing in the world these days. But
daunting.
It is daunting. It really is. And because there's so much going on, obviously you're trying to social distance. You're also trying to get in and out of there as fast as possible. You can't find any of the things that you want. Some of the people are just, you know, the fellow customers are just completely, you know, they scream at you because you get 4 inches closer than you were. And you wonder, well, if you're that scared, why are you here? But it does bring up a good question about the face masks. We've heard a lot about there not being enough, but Bob, what do you think? I know even the president has discussed the possibility of making sure everyone wears a face mask when they do indeed go out.
Yeah, Joe, and I think, you know, I'm looking at direction and conversations out of CDC that are starting to change their position on face masks, and I would not at all be surprised before the end of the week if they put an advisory out. The issue, I think, or the challenge with an advisory to say, hey, wear a face mask if you go out, is that there are not face masks available. So if they put out such an advisory, they better have an alternative to, so people can understand and easily understand what they need to do. It gets back to a different, I think, a different problem, though. We still don't understand as much about this virus as we thought. And the longer this goes on, and the more data points we have, the more we realize that we really didn't understand, you know, a lot of the characteristics of it. You think where we were about a month ago.
Right.
And thinking about what vulnerable populations were, that certainly is different now. The other point that I'll make, and this is credit to the administration and to the United States leadership, is, you know, China's an authoritarian government, and, you know, that it is easier for an authoritarian government to act draconian in these situations. This is going to sound perverse, but I'm still a supporter of our democratic republic, and the idea that there has to be more conversation than just a single leader making a declarative statement, and that's where the coordination function, I think, is so critical from the president and the federal government.
You know, Bob, I'm really struck by what you said, because this also struck me yesterday as I was watching the press briefing with the health experts, and that is that the data, it's not what we originally thought, and we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot now, but to your point, there's a lot that we didn't know then. And this idea, and I touched on it at the very beginning when I was going over the headlines, but this idea that 25% of us could have the virus and not have any outward symptoms.
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. And the concern with that number is, you know, how do you reopen society in a way that continues to flatten the curve? And I do think that's going to be one of the big challenges. And this is where I think listening to people like Fauci and the folks at CDC becomes so critically important for us, because it's their advice that's going to drive how we should operate.
You know, it is so scary when you look at Jacob's Pillow after, 86 years, Joe, something like that, closing down for the summer. This is the apex of dance in the United States. It is the top place. And we have Tanglewood in the Berkshires. We have the Linda at WAMC. All of these places not only aren't going to take anybody now, but the real question is, who will go and sit there thinking that what Fauci says may be true, that we may have a re-up of the thing come November?
Come fall. And it's 88 years. I just looked it up so no one writes those letters. But just trying to save everybody some time.
Right, you are. And by the way, speaking of letters, I'm sorry, I have to say this, Joe.
Yes.
One guy keeps writing me pro-Trumpian letters. Really mean letters. And in each case, I send him my telephone number and I say, call me up, and he never does. So yesterday, I wrote back to him for the third time, and guess what I'm getting? Undeliverable, no such person. You know, let me say that there are some people out there who may be working on the side of, those people who present disinformation. Yeah.
Russia. Thank you
can
Rosemary.
Say Russia, or I can say disinformation. Fascinating.
At the same time, though, Joe, back to the face mask issue. You know, there's some amazing work being done in like just even on UAlbany with my college, emergency preparedness, homeland security, cybersecurity, in conjunction with the engineering college. We're using our 3D printing capacity to help the local hospitals by printing elements of the personal protective equipment.
When
people are starting to get despondent and say, "Oh, this is really wearing me down," this is the time where I say, "I got to pick you up and put you on your feet, because all of society can help in this situation."
How does that work? How did the 3D thing? Because there are many of us like me who just don't know enough. You have to have a 3D printer, right? I can't print myself a mask on my home printer, can I?
No, not at all. It's a special printer that actually makes a computer-aided drawing and actually turns it into something real using multiple different materials.
Rubber bands.
Our situation, we're printing the head brackets and we're working with the hospitals to make sure that they have as much protective gear as we can possibly give the great folks that are working tirelessly to help with us.
All right, we have a couple of minutes, a few more letters. Rosemary, I'll let you handle this one. I understand the good news typically is not reported above the fold or in breaking news. We know, however, that somewhere around 80% of infected people recover without hospitalization and do well. Shouldn't some of these folks be featured in the evening news and daily statistics, not just the feel-good segments at the end of a broadcast?
No, that's not the news. No, I hate feel-good stories that are just about giving artificial hope. The story here is that as many as 240,000 people or more will die. That's the story, and that's what I would want to write about. It's what I want to read about. If there were actual news, Joe, if they somehow tapped into whatever antibodies or whatever it is in the makeup of the people who are surviving this after only mild cases or resist it, then yes, we would write about it. But to just say, "Oh, there's hope," it's a fake story. It's like it just feeds the idea that it's just a cold, it's just a flu. No, I don't. I think that would be really irresponsible and boring.
The other thing, too, and I agree with you 100%, I'm just, could you say, okay, here are the numbers, this is how many people have it, this is how many people have died, and this is how many people recovered? Is that another data point that should be reported?
I don't know, Joe.
Do we know that?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I hesitate to disagree with Rosemary because she was so kind to me a few minutes ago. But the truth of the matter is that there is some responsibility on the part of the news media, I think, not only to tell, the tough story, which we are certainly hearing every day, but also to offer some hope to people. Am I wrong about that, Rosemary?
Boy, I've heard this argument. The thing is that good news stories are not remembered in the same way that bad ones were. Poignant stories about humanity. I read one today that made me actually cry, about a nurse in a hospital who used her own cell phones to make sure that an old woman dying got to talk to her daughter, because of course her family could not come in to be with her as she's dying, but the nurse hooked them up. Those are stories about humanity. But saying things like, "Oh, let's take no, I just think it's phony. And Bob, you know this, at the University of Albany there's a big campaign that's been going on for years where they put up signs all over campus saying, like, 60% of students do not drink themselves into oblivion every weekend. And to me, I read that and said, that means 40% of our students are drinking themselves into oblivion. It's a way of looking at things, pessimism and optimism. And I don't want to impose my mood on readers. No.
Yeah, but at the same time, Rosemary, I think it is important that if people can hear the real stories about what people are going through, I'm not saying necessarily sugarcoat it, but at the same time, this is a hard disease. It's a hard virus to recover from, but at the same time, you can recover, and here's what I did. The other element of this,
different. That would be a real story. Yeah, if you had a good news story with teeth in it, that's what's hard to find. What I read, there are sites where they just print good news, and it's all sugar coating.
And yet, I think an awful lot of people think, You know, and this is where why we have so many mental health professionals who are on the phone in New York State now with a special number and everything, that once you get it, you're consigned to a miserable death. And I think the word has to go out that you are not. And by using examples, well, that's pretty important. Yeah, go ahead.
But don't you think examples are Tom Hanks is back, Chris Cuomo is still broadcasting?
I think the case is we have to go to a break. We're desperately late. But I do think that in many of the stories that I've seen where they have done diaries and have showed a patient at the beginning of it, the middle of it, and the end of it, and have them explain their symptoms and talk about it, have been very instructional and interesting. Obviously, no case, you know, everybody's case is different. There's mild cases and there are extreme cases, but to report those is interesting, I think, to see
what
people go
through. Well, a year from now, when we go back and see if anybody got reinfected or if it had lasting impact, I think that will be interesting, too.
Sounds like we should handle this on the media project tomorrow, Rosemary.
There you go. Let you duke it out again.
Good point.
All right. We have to go to a break. We will be back after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 1st of April. 8 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Bob Griffin making up the panel this morning. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We have many. We'll go to those now.
Joe, just one second.
Yes, sir.
How about a huge shout-out to our Ray Graff for everything that he has done?
Absolutely.
When you were out handling the news the way that he does every morning. I just was listening to him, and I said, boy, are we lucky
really
to
good.
Have him.
Yes. Yeah. He's here, and he has a great picture on Instagram of him with his bottle of Purell, which is very good. He's taking very good care of himself and being very safe. What was I saying? Oh, yes. Let's go to letters. We go to Bob, who says, a writer, Bob, I should say. Yesterday, Trump said that Abbott is making 50,000 tests per day. Later, he said 100,000. Well, at 100,000 per day, it would take about 10 years to make enough for every person in the United States. I heard that, too, but I think it was just one of the labs that were doing the tests. Right, Bob? Am I correct on that?
I'm really not sure about that, Joe.
Okay.
I saw the different numbers, and I haven't been able to figure out what happened with that. Now I will say that, you know, in the fog of dealing with the response, that it is not unusual for these numbers to sort of get jumbled up. But that's also why it needs to be corrected as quickly as possible.
There was a lengthy.
Go ahead.
Right.
I was going to say, we American editors in Bosnia used to have a rule that if any reporter from Bosnia used a number in the story, you were to assume it was wrong and then do your own reporting. And I handled numbers from Trump or his administration in the same way.
Good point. Barbara asks, what can be done? Is there any way that the behavior or rhetoric of the president... I read that one a long time ago and I didn't delete it. Let's go to Walter, who says, what about Trump's statement yesterday that scarves are a good substitute for masks? Is that even accurate? Probably depend on the scarf, I guess.
I mean, I would... We would have to... Yeah, it would depend on the type of material, but this is also where I assume that our national labs, which we have some amazing national labs, some of the smartest people in the country working in them, should and are testing how this virus survives. And believe it or not, I still think that there's some questions about how long it can remain alive and on what materials. And I assume that testing is going on right now.
Scott says, this is about the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation Model. I call BS. No deaths modeled after July. Yep. Isn't the illness going to roller coaster along through the end of the year and beyond? Go panel. I did hear Dr. Fauci say yesterday that actually the deaths would lag after the virus and new cases subside. But Bob, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. And this is the problem of trying to hang your hat on one model. I try to approach the the models, sort of like I approach hurricane models, that there's a whole bunch of them and you try to aggregate them. And I think that's the healthiest way to do, because there are so many variables that go into these models that we can't account for everything. But I would not ever hang my hat on the data from one model.
All right, let's go to another then, with that said. And we go to Alan, who says, did you notice, another Alan, did you notice that Trump included himself among the experts in yesterday's press conference? Yes,
yeah,
I did notice that.
And that contrasted with Andrew, who, if I may, who said yesterday, I'm not an expert, and yet could roll off facts and figures and hospitals and beds in a way, and pandemic relief in a way that we will never see Trump do it.
All right, let's go back to, let's see. Ellen says, according to the New York Times a few days ago, a quarter of the COVID-19 deaths in New York City have been in nursing homes. Why are nursing homes not included in the personnel and equipment optimization that the governor is ordering the hospitals to do? Or are they included, but it's not being discussed? Does anybody know the answer to that one?
I do not know, but I would like to ask the same question about prisons. I think that we're condemning people who have committed crimes and deserve to be punished, but they're not capital offenses. I think we're committing them to death by not dealing with the problem in crowded, crammed prisons.
And before everybody writes in, Rosemary was not equating being in a nursing home with being in prison. But just I wanted to make sure that everybody was clear on that before we get a slew of letters.
I'm glad you got there before I did.
They're both major institutions, though, with lots of people in a limited area. That's the only comparison, of course.
I'm assuming that they are included in the calculations.
With
emergency plans, a lot of times we absolutely include those care facilities as critical infrastructure. What we're getting to, sort of, I think part of, I mean, the root of part of the problem is, you know, one message is coming out from the federal government that everything is great and there's enough supplies, but on the ground, we're not seeing it. And this is where leadership really makes a big difference, because you're making life and death decisions, because every ventilator that goes to Michigan means that it's not coming to New York. And this is where the aggregation and coordination becomes really, really important.
And, Bob, one other thing, and that is on the nursing home question. It's clear that no nursing home that I know of, because I've been trying to stay on top of this, I have a brother in one of them, is letting anybody near the places. Any outsiders, you don't get in. So it could be, of course, that every one of those nursing homes is making that decision on their own, but it's much more likely that states are setting out regulations on them.
Absolutely. And again, I think that's, if I could go back to the letter for a second, Alan, I mean, there's a whole set of care workers in these facilities that seems to get forgotten, but they're so critically important. And every day they're continuing to go in and care for our family members who are in these facilities, and they deserve an awful lot of credit as well.
Back to the left. Go ahead.
I want to go back for 1 minute to prisons, because we're doing the same thing that our society does, which is somehow if you're in a nursing home, you've done nothing wrong, you deserve our attention. But if you're a bad person and you're in a prison, you don't deserve our attention. So while I think that we will pay attention and attend to the needs of workers and residents of nursing homes, we're going to ignore the prisons, and they are in deadly danger as well.
I think your point is extremely well taken, Rosemary. You know, this is, it's an easy comparison for some people, but you know, if in fact you're in, you know, you're putting people in prison, and they have no choice about how to behave, you're responsible for what happens to them, no question.
You know, it may be coming a little late, Rosemary, but I think, you know, some of the stories that we have been seeing, the Times and the Post, and I saw a great piece in the LA Times that have been reporting on the front lines of the prison and have been doing an amazing job of what's been happening there, because it is really scary.
Yeah, and I would make the comparison, though, Rosemary, not necessarily to the homes. I would equate the prisons more to what I'm seeing out of the Navy. So I heard the story today about the Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, same thing. Yes.
Okay, and that and to me that is exactly you know, if the policy is that we're going to empty empty aircraft carrier, 4,000 sailors, and then go in and decontaminate, then it's something I think the prisons need to do.
Right, right.
All right. Kathy also agrees with Rosemary about the news. The news should be the news. There are plenty of other things on TV to make us feel good. Helena says
that on the media project.
Helena says lots of us are making cloth face masks. It's not complicated, just basic sewing skills. I'm wearing one when I go out because someone I know tested positive, just in case I am a carrier. Anna said, "Who paid?"
Wait a second, before we go off that, Joe, I think there's a really interesting point there, though. If you notice, we've taken most of the Home Ec courses out of our K-12 curriculum. So we've actually raised the generation that don't know how to sew, don't know how to cook, don't know how to take care of themselves in that respect. And this should be a wake-up call to us that we really need to rethink, you know, a lot of the elements of society. But certainly K-12 and starting to think about maybe bringing back, you know, not just civics, but also home economics and some of those basic skill sets, maybe something we want to talk about.
I don't know.
Only
you know,
in the future could we not segregate boys into shop and girls into home ec.
Yeah.
Good point.
And my choice was any of that or orchestra. I chose orchestra, and I'm still glad I did it. But I can't.
You had an either or?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Now, see, we had orchestra, and then you had either home ec, shop, or art. But anyway. Gordon says, I know coughing and sneezing generate particles, but so does talking. I heard that one in four of us will show no symptoms. With my new job at the liquor store, should I wear a mask? I don't think it was going there, Rosemary. With my new job at the liquor store, should I wear a mask to protect our customers?
You know, on the mask thing, I have a friend who's sending me some, and I'm sharing them with my friends. 8 billion Chinese people can't be wrong. They were wearing masks before there was coronavirus. And so I've decided that it doesn't hurt. It may not help. We don't know that yet, but it doesn't hurt. So, yes, I'm going to wear a mask from now on when I go out.
Well, and if it makes him feel better and he stays at his job, I think that's really important because there's nothing quite like a good drink at the end of the day after dealing with the situation. So
yeah, I'm
all
for
what you're doing as critical infrastructure. So thank you.
Yes, I that liquor store is the is the glass of water at the end of the desert.
But it is interesting. But it is interesting, Joe, that some of these institutions, like the Big Y and Great Barrington and other places, are doing unbelievable work. They're putting up plexiglass between people who are coming in, doing the buying, and others. And
they keep you in the box. Have you been boxed in?
I haven't gone. Unfortunately, I'm not, I'm not going.
Okay.
I'm just
repeating you shouldn't. What I've heard. You shouldn't go, but
because I'm old and decrepit, right?
Well, no, but you just shouldn't go. So, but they put you in a they when you go
that
up
means yes.
to the when they put you up to the I never use the words old and decrepit. You're in a vulnerable population, is all.
Well put. Yeah.
But they put you in the box, right, Rosemary? You've been right.
I have, although mostly I just went to stock up on tuna fish, so I'm not going again.
Exactly, tuna fish, now the panacea of our time.
Bob told you to do that a long time ago.
I did.
And I have sent him thank you notes on it. I have a whole shelf of it.
All right. Let's go to, let's see here. Let's go to.
And while you're waiting, salmon. Canned salmon. Canned salmon. Nothing like it in the world. Nothing.
Louise says, so New York needs money for the budget. So legalize marijuana. There you go. Thanks for being my mooring companion.
Yeah, I agree it should be legalized. And we've talked about this with the governor a number of times, including this recent discussion. However, I have to say it is we're at a point now where it's just silly not to do it. And it's clear that it's being held up by the liberal side, not the conservative side. In other words, the question is, where will the profits from marijuana sales go? Will they go to the people who need it the most, or will they go to the same old? And that seems to be what the holdup is, as I talk to the governor.
Very interesting. And we'll see. Let's go over to
No, he's already said it's not going to be in the budget.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Marcella says, no, I already read that one. Okay. Anna says, who paid for the supplies that are on their way from China and who initiated that arrangement? I believe that came out of the state of New York, did it not?
Yeah, I mean, each of the states is independently trying to get critical infrastructure, critical supplies, excuse me, like ventilators and masks. So each state is bidding through their own procurement systems. At the same time, the federal government is bidding with Chinese companies against the states. And this is where that lack of coordination really rears its head.
Barbara says, my sister lives in Paraguay, and no one gets into a grocery store without having their temperature taken. Kyle says, is there any reason that complete government incompetence that the U.S. could end up with far more deaths than China, especially considering our population is a fraction of theirs?
Yeah, my son, who is a survivalist and much better at math than I am, said when he looks at the data that Dr. Burke put out yesterday, when we don't have full mitigation, it actually comes out to something like 500,000 people dead by the end of the year. Now, we have. I am, like most journalists, not adept at math, but that doesn't seem unreasonable when you think about it. And that's a horrible toll.
So if I could jump in, Joe, I would caution our listeners, though, to take with a grain of salt numbers that are coming out of China. My older son pointed out a really interesting fact to me is that while the Chinese government is saying that everything is under control, the orders for burial urns is skyrocketing. So there is not a good data set that I trust coming out of, frankly, either China or Iran. That's why watching what's occurring in Italy and Spain and Germany and France is so important to us.
Well, and that seemed to be the numbers that both Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci were quoting yesterday, saying that the best modeling was coming out of Italy.
Yeah, I think it's the most reasonable modeling for us to be following.
Molly says again, Bro.
There are some information coming out of both Iran and China that's useful. For example, that China reshut all of the movie theaters that they allowed to reopen because there was a resurgence. That's something we should pay attention to, whether or not there are strong numbers attached to it.
Yeah, absolutely, Rosemary. And that's also where watching what occurred in Hong Kong, who they really did a nice job at the beginning, and then they lifted their restrictions too quickly,
right.
and they were looking at it. They're looking at a second wave.
Molly
absolutely,
says,
yeah.
Again, bravo to you all in this dark time. You still carry the torch. We thank you. Two things. First, why Trump didn't invoke the War Production Act earlier? Remember what the great Woodward and Bernstein said, follow the money. Who benefited besides Senators Burr and Loeffler? Second, we have a president whose business experience seems to have dictated pitting subordinates against each other to cull the herd and have the best emerge victorious, just as on The Apprentice. He now appears to be doing the same thing at this time of crisis, but the prize here is vital life-saving equipment. All those who wanted a businessman to lead the economy can now see the result of that desire. Mark says, no single purchaser of ventilators and other necessary materials. I find it unconscionable to learn that there is no single U.S. purchasing agent responsible for securing ventilators, masks, etc., for all, and then have a process to distribute these materials to the U.S. states. Please do not assign incompetence as the reason for this failure. This is a conscious decision by the federal government. Why is there no one calling for this procedure to change? Governor Cuomo complained loudly about this, but no action has been taken to remedy the situation. Bob, I'll defer to you on this. I will say that I was somewhat taken aback yesterday when there were many questions during the briefing to Dr. Birx about testing. And she said, well, actually, you know, there's probably 500,000 tests in places where they're not being used. Well, then why are they there and not where they need to be?
That's exactly what the question is. And that's exactly why this pandemic is calling for a federal response and federal coordination. And you're right. This is a role that HHS and FEMA should be working as the logistics arm for the government, supporting what the state's needs are. And understanding that you can't get everything, but at the same time, you can start to target the areas that are harder hit. And that's the comment that comes back to the amount of testing. It does us no good if, you know, some town in Oklahoma has enough testing for its 100 people. If our population centers that are starting to show blooms don't have enough.
And this gets back to an earlier question of whether it's true or not, and how it can be proven. But one of our listeners saying that, you know, are red states getting equipment that blue states aren't?
Well, you know, and that's my concern, because I was looking at numbers about what Florida was getting versus what they asked for in Texas. We're getting, and then they asked for, which was more equipment than they had requested. And New York and California were being undercut. And you know, it comes back to an earlier letter, Joe. You know, why didn't the president call on the WARS Act? I think he backed himself into a corner by initially saying that this was nothing. It was a common cold. It was going to go away. Mm-hmm. That this was a hoax. That this was a Democratic effort to embarrass him, and frankly you can't invoke emergency powers when you're telling everybody that there's nothing to worry about.
We have about 2 minutes before we go to break, and I'll try to get as many letters in as I can here. Jim says, I agree that Trump's briefing had a different tone yesterday, but how long will it last? We've seen him revert back and forth and turn on a dime so many times before. I just can't fall for one day of a serious tone. I don't believe he will stick to it and do his job. He just can't do it.
Absolutely. But what I was doing was appreciating the reporters who were basically deferring to the experts and not to Trump, which he couldn't stand. He really bullied his way right back into it. He saw what was up, and it was clear he didn't like it.
Chris?
Yeah, it was a good strategy and very passive-aggressive at the same time.
Chris says, news should not be made to make us feel good or bad. Isn't that propaganda? That referring to an earlier letter.
Yeah.
Hi, you smart WAMC panel, you, says Margaret. You guys are getting me through each morning. Just one reason why we are supporters on the masks. Certainly no evidence that they hurt anyone by wearing them in public. Rather, they add to the medical provider's current need for them. We can make our own at home. The New York Times has a sewing pattern in today's paper. They do, too. It's really cool, right on the front page. If we, at least on the digital edition, if we made our own out of washable cotton, you can make it. You can at least make your own choice. That from Deborah. We also go to Ernest, who says Trump's bump in approval ratings is a natural rally around the flag moment, but note that it is far below the bumps from leaders around the world, many of whom have bumped 10, 15, or 20 points in the crisis. That's interesting. That's a good point. We have, let's see, 30 seconds. So Kate writes to us about prisons and says, my Army soldier son works in corrections at Fort Leavenworth. They are practicing social distancing as much as they are able. Dining, rec, and isolation are more vulnerable for prisoners. Tables are being wiped clean between seatings. No more workshops, gym, etc. That from Leavenworth. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll do our last round up until for another 15 or 20 minutes or so. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Playing music from Mother Earth's Plantasia album by Mort Garson, and you can always find our playlist posted online at WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable.
Hey, Joe, we missed an opportunity to play Dr. Demento today, though.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. We should have for April 1st.
Oh, yeah, we did. But that's been canceled. April Fool's Day, canceled. The New York Times said it. It's been canceled. John says, why is it a surprise that 25% of those infected with COVID-19 never show any symptoms? The BBC, Canada, even New Zealand have been explaining this very fact for weeks now. Oh, right. This is America, where nobody cares about facts and experience is a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Thank you, Rosemary. My daughter is a sophomore at SUNY Albany in the theater department, says Mark, currently carrying a 4.0 GPA. congratulations. Nice boasting, I will say. In addition to keeping up with her coursework, she takes great pride in her cooking and sewing skills. In fact, she's hoping to fill her current independent study course by sewing masks. So, cool story there from Mark.
That's an awesome story. And remember, it's not boasting if it's the truth. So congratulations on that 4.0. Remember, you still have 4 weeks left in the semester, so keep with it and keep that GPA up. So congratulations.
You heard the dean. Diane says, just wanted to add a thank you to the panel and to WAMC. I've been listening for 25 years. Could that be? I used to live in Poughkeepsie, now live in North Adams, and I continue to depend on WAMC for my news, entertainment, and now the latest in COVID-19. I'm so glad you're airing Governor Cuomo's daily briefings, and I wish Governor Baker would come on the air as well. Thank you again and again.
I would like to address that, if I could, Joe, for just 1 minute. We have been trying again and again and again to get the governor of Massachusetts on the air with us. We would love to have a similar outlet for him for half the state. I mean, this state starts, WAMC starts at Worcester and comes all the way up. So more than half the state is here, and we'd love it if he would come on, just a gentle nudge and a push. And it's not as if we're against them. I'll be honest with you. I voted for them.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly there have been many invitations, and they continue. So we'll hope for the best. We go to Marcello, who says, we the public have heard that more people survive this virus than die from it. Unfortunately, there is not enough testing done for a reliable data point on this important fact. However, we the public would be grateful for reminders that this is a death sentence for only a small percentage. Maybe me, maybe not. So we all have to be careful and follow the rules.
Right, you are.
I don't think anyone will disagree with
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's see. David is thanking Rosemary for raising all the prisoners facing coronavirus and the corrections staff. The concentration lies in the prisons in New York's North Country, in and around the Adirondacks, is reported. 9,000 people are crammed together in the North Country. At least 14 inmates are already testing positive. Reducing concentration and maintaining distance of those serving time is critical for the prisoners, for the corrections officers, for the dozens of family members praying for their loved ones in prison. Governor Cuomo and his team must take steps to do so.
I think it is going to take public pressure for that to happen, because they definitely are going to get the last consideration of any group in our society, and it's just not right.
This from Bobby. Will Mnuchin be handing out tax dollars to corporations that contribute to Trump's reelection? I don't trust him. Do you?
No.
No. And the answer is yes. I do believe that.
Yeah.
And by the way, is there anybody who thinks that he won't be playing favorites in terms of ventilators and other things? We already see some indications of it in California, New York State. I don't know about Massachusetts, where I live, but you know, this is par for the course with this guy. It's extraordinary.
But you know, Alan, this is where I get frustrated. So take California, for instance. I mean, Kevin McCarthy has been a huge supporter of the president. I get it. They're in the same party. But how can he stand by and let his own people get screwed by these policies? And where is his responsibility to stop acting like a lackey to the president and do what he was elected to do and stand up for people in his district, but also the people in California?
Okay, so that's a good question. Now let's have a good answer.
All right,
I'm waiting. Go ahead.
We'll just hang it out there, I guess.
Well, also, we have, as I think Bob mentioned before, somebody did, that we have Republican congresspeople in New York State who are strangely mute on this. We have, you know, somebody from the North Country. It's literally unbelievable.
You know, we have a few moments, there's something that I was thinking about yesterday, and obviously this has been reported and people have been talking about it, but it's about we've been focused, rightly so, on a lot of our physical health as when it comes to COVID-19. Mental health, though, and mental health of, are we ready? Are we bracing? It was a question that came out of the briefing yesterday. Are the American people ready to see 250,000 people
dead in this country, and perhaps have that number lower or perhaps have that number higher. Either way, it's a huge number. And I mean, let's look, even what we have now is a huge number. And I'm just wondering about, as we go through this and we are stocking up and we're social distancing and we're isolating and we're staying at home, I mean, already that has some impact on our mental health. But then when it starts to hit home and people around us are dying and people that we know and love are dying, the impact that that has. And I don't, I mean, this is commentary for me, but I don't think we've ever been very good about mental health in this country. And I just wonder if we are at all ready for the ramifications of that aspect of this crisis.
Joe, I don't think we are. And this is one of the areas that I really hope our emergency management folks are starting to think about is sort of this next wave of services that are going to need to be spun up in order to help the population. I'll also note I got a really interesting text from a friend in Pennsylvania who's noting that, you know, reaching out to friends and family more often right now, and even sending texts to people that you may have fallen off with. It's so important, that ability to just reach out electronically right now and give people a pat on the back, a hug, just thinking about you, goes so far in helping people get through the day. But it ties back to that whole issue of the mental health crisis that we potentially face with this situation.
One of the reasons I thought that Cuomo was so incredible in the last couple of briefings that he's given is that he really was talking to the mental health of the population. He
right.
was.
And yeah,
he was
very much
about
so.
What it feels like to be alone. What it feels like to face this terrible situation, either by yourself or when in the basement or in the house. It really does speak to it. And New York is doing something interesting. I'm sure Bob knows about this. They've set up a lot of hotlines for people who are feeling really depressed to call.
Yeah. And there are.
Yeah, Alan, and this is where I think as a society we can do some things a little bit differently. Like last Thursday, we hosted an online game night for students. We had about 100 students that got on and they were playing games. You know, it was just I couldn't follow some of them. But I was amazed and happy just to hear the laughter and sort of the sense of relief that they get just by playing some silly games together. And there are things like that we can do. To keep ourselves together as a society.
It seems really important, and you know, we've always kind of put mental health aside, and I just hope that this becomes an important part of the equation, because obviously the death toll is going to be extraordinary, and I think for people just dealing with the over just hearing about it reported all the time. It is especially for people who are in isolation and are alone. Rosemary? Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I live with this all the time. You know, my mother has to be in because she's in a very vulnerable population. But we've started a thing where every day we just call three friends or relatives and just say, hi, how are you doing?
Right.
And it's very nice. Yeah.
So think of that as we all the things that we have to do in our lives, but that is an important one. So we'll add that. I want to.
And Joe, one more point that, you know, going back to both this question and the arts question, I got to tip my hat to a lot of artists who are going online and putting their art out to us free. So if you're home and you have connections, don't sleep on things like what did I see that but Chelly was going to do a concert.
Right.
He's going to do a live concert from Milan. He's going to be alone. I mean, there isn't going to be an audience there. But that's the type of things that we can do to remind everybody that we're better than this and that we can come out the other side. And it's also why arts are so important.
It is important.
Almost overwhelming how much is out there. Museums all have put their collections onto their site so you can, like, do a virtual tour. Iftok Perlman is doing a concert this morning that you can call into. It's really, there's too much to do. I could sit. I have to remind myself to get up away from the computer because you can live your whole life through that screen these days.
As much as I would love to end the conversation there, we do have a few more moments, so I'm going to bring up a huge issue. It's an article that was from the Los Angeles Times, and I thought it was an interesting and sobering article about something that has been labeled it has a nickname of the coronavirus coup.
Yep.
Reading from the article,
good.
To battle a spreading pandemic, democracies across the globe are turning to tools like emergency proclamations, abrupt lockdowns, and enhanced public surveillance. But so are the world's autocrats, and analysts say the burgeoning outbreak is providing cover for some audacious power grabs, again nicknamed Corona Coup. The latest example is in Hungary, where Parliament on Monday granted the Prime Minister sweeping new authority to rule by decree for an unlimited period of time. Viktor Orban, already engaged in a systematic campaign to consolidate his powers and stifle political opposition, citing the need for heightened powers as a way to aggressively fight the outbreak. Rosemary, I'll let you take the first stab, and then we'll go around the room.
Yeah, it's appalling, and we need to be reading these stories and be on the alert for the same thing happening here. We've talked on the program about the Department of Justice going after the right of habeas corpus, which was not suspended during either of the world wars and should not be now. The most egregious example is Israel. Hungary is the most recent. But Netanyahu has stopped all efforts to carry out cases in the judiciary, which is interesting because guess what case they are about to consider? His corruption case.
Sure.
It's an excuse, and it could easily happen in this country as well under the guise of the need for strong leadership, which we certainly do need, to give sweeping powers to a president. We've talked about being worried about the elections. All of this comes under that same rubric. Yes, we need protection and security, but we do not need to give up civil rights in order to obtain that. There has to be a balance.
Bob?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. One is that there are a couple quotes that I'd remind our listeners. One was from Benjamin Franklin, and I'm going to paraphrase that those that choose security over freedom lose both. And another quote that I always go back to is a comment that Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson said about, you know, we could create a secure community, but nobody would want to live there. And I do think that this is a real problem that we're going to have to face. And I caution, you know, once government takes freedom back from or civil liberties back from the people, it's really hard for us to regain those rights. At the same time, government obviously has a responsibility to help us protect ourselves. But this is a dilemma. I mean, I don't want the federal government getting complete access to everybody's phone records and be able to follow us around. I don't want pandemic surveillance to go beyond the pandemic into our civil liberties. And that's a really important conversation that as a society we have to have.
All right.
We made the mistake of the Patriot Act after 9/11.
We have 10 seconds.
We could do it again.
All right. No, that's okay. Good. My thanks to everybody. Sorry we didn't get more of Chris Churchill and that technology didn't work, but we'll work on that. Thanks to Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Bob Griffin. You're all great. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.